back from Memorial Day, and we have an amazing and awesome show for you guys tonight on The Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. Earlier today, I interviewed Elizabeth Warren. It's a very interesting interview you guys are going to want to check out. We will have that up soon on our YouTube channels. We'll have clips from the interviews on youtube.com/TYT. That's, of course, our main YouTube channel. And we'll also put that up on facebook.com/TheYoungTurks. And the entirety of the interview, which you should really watch for its full context, will be on youtube.com/TYTInterviews also later today. And then later in this program, we've got an amazing story on private contractors, the new Pinkerton detectives basically being used, that were being used at Standing Rock. It turns out Wes Clark Jr. was right all along. It's this group called Tiger Swan, and the way that they described the protesters is unbelievable, horrific. They compared them, peaceful protesters, to jihadis. These guys are absolutely mental. It's an amazing story broken by The Intercept. We do have good news on Democratic wins across the country. And then here comes Corbyn. I am back from the UK. I have data, facts, statistics, and fun anecdotes that'll relate to the Corbyn issue. By the way, I also interviewed Larry Sanders when I was there. That's Bernie Sanders' brother. He's also running in those elections as a member of the Green Party. That'll also be up on TYT Interviews. Check that out. And then in the second hour, a story about Trump's severed head, which is obviously disturbing. So don't worry, his head continues to be on his body in the real world. Okay, so having said all that, let's start with Trump news, which I find to be overall fun. Okay, as much fun as Trump news can be. Okay, we got drums over at the White House. I don't want to say the word rats. I do want to say the sinking ship. And whatever those vermin happen to be, they appear to be heading for the exits. Some running on their own volition, some being pushed out. Where his communication director falls in there, well, you be the judge as I tell you this story. CBS News reporting the White House is preparing a plan to restructure communications and possibly staffing for when President Trump returns from his overseas trip. So, and now he has returned, and all of a sudden there is a departure. Interesting. CBS News has confirmed from two sources that three leakers of classified information at the White House have been identified and are expected to be fired. Drums. Okay, let's continue on this. Last week, the Trump campaign released an email to supporters entitled "Sabotage," and that's actually, I scream that because it's in capital letters, in which the campaign said there are people within our own unelected bureaucracy that want to sabotage President Trump and our entire America First movement. Man, lots of internal drums here. Is this guy one of them? Well, let's find out today. President Donald Trump's communications director, Mike Dubke, is resigning from the White House. They're kicking him out. They're showing him the door. They're kicking him out the door. What can he do? So was he one of the leakers? I don't know. Apparently, Trump was mad at him for other reasons as well. That's what we're going to get into some political reporting in a second. Stay with Huffington Post for a second. Dubke didn't give a reason for his departure, but multiple media outlets reported that it was because he was largely isolated from the president's steadfast inner circle. So let me explain what parts of that are true and untrue. Now, when you don't give a reason for your departure, that means it was bad. So you didn't even have time to come up with a BS excuse of like, oh man, my stomach hurt, and the dog ate my homework, and my wife sprained her ankle, and my family, I gotta go take care of my family, right? Man, that is like, hey, dude, you gotta pack your stuff, and you send me a letter telling me how proud you were of working here, and it was such an honor, okay? Go, get out. So that's partly what happened here. In terms of, is it because he didn't have much internal support? Well, partly so, as you see here, that the only guy that apparently had his back was Sean Spicer, which is clearly not enough. But that's not the reason for his departure. It's that when he got into some trouble and they wanted to make him the scapegoat, he didn't have enough political clout to be able, and enough allies in the White House to be able to survive. So that's what happened here. So, but why was he in trouble in the first place? Well, another Republican strategist, now this is from The Hill, another Republican strategist close to the White House said Trump was annoyed at Dubke after the aide told aides last month, there is no Trump doctrine. God, Trump is so funny, man. What's the Trump doctrine? Oh, of course, there's no Trump doctrine. He says one thing, then he says the exact opposite in the next sentence, or sometimes within the sentence, let alone the next day or the next week. So what would a Trump doctrine be? We're against trade deals, except we're totally in favor of them. We're going to show China that you can't do currency manipulation, except we're going to let them do currency manipulation. And the list goes on and on and on. What in the world would be the Trump doctrine? If you press Trump on it at this very moment, he wouldn't be able to tell you himself. And he's Trump of the Trump doctrine. But nonetheless, Dubkey says what is clearly obvious. He says, how come he gets to say there's no Trump doctrine? How dare he? Well, the knucklehead, what is it then? Oh, I don't know, but that sounds embarrassing. Yeah, it's embarrassing because you're embarrassing. So sources say Trump stewed over the remark reported then by Politico. In the weeks that followed, he told friends and associates he didn't feel like Dubkey was doing a good job. He gives these guys in the communications department an absolute nightmare of a job, no win situation. He tells them to go and lie on one particular topic, and then he will tweet the opposite within sometimes within hours, sometimes within minutes of him sending out those folks with certain marching orders. He doesn't tell them ahead of time what kind of trouble he's going to get into. He doesn't tell them what the strategy should be. That is an impossible job. And then when you don't somehow show Donald Trump in an excellent light, he goes, "That's a Dubkey guy. Doesn't even know what the Trump doctrine is." Okay, what is it? I don't know, but Dubkey. Okay, as a White House source says, as a result, Dubkey became the fall guy. He never recovered. And he's a child. Child. Trump is nothing but a child, man. It wasn't me. It was Dubkey. It was Dubkey. Who thinks it was actually Dubkey? Nobody thinks that. He was around in the White House for only 3 months. Came in as communications director, and was he a leaker? I don't know. You know, it's possible he was one of the leakers. Everybody in the White House is leaking, so you can't swing a bat in the White House, which, by the way, you shouldn't do, and not hit a leaker. So I don't know if they fired him because of the leaker or because Trump is a child. Probably the combination of the two. And then, but Dubkey's allies, presumably, as they're leaking this to the Hill, say that he wanted to leave too. Now, that's standard when you're shown the door, but he does have a good case to make here. Last quote for you guys. Another source close to Dubkey said the appointment of Mueller as special prosecutor was, quote, the last straw. In other words, vermin meet sinking ship. It's like, I'm getting blamed for things that makes no sense whatsoever. Did I leak? Probably everybody's leaking. And the whole ship is leaking. We're going to run into an iceberg. There's a special prosecutor now. You want to fire me? Great, pull the chute. Why am I leaving? I didn't bother coming out with a reason. I got to go. So Dubkey had to go, and now he's gone. He won't be the last one. There'll be a lot more people heading for the exit soon, as Trump loves blaming other people for his problems. Plus, they are leaking. Plus, he and the entire administration is in a world of trouble. Okay, now one of my favorite stories, only second to the next story I'm going to tell you. Okay, Washington Post is reporting about how Donald Trump likes to get his intelligence briefings. Now, there's 17 intelligence agencies throughout the federal government, and the heads of those synthesize their findings and give it to the presidents. Now, normally rather thick folder because there's a lot of intelligence in the world. There's a lot of countries, there's a lot of foreign policy issues, and it's oftentimes a mess. And I've told you in the past, based on past reporting, that Donald Trump likes to synthesize to one piece of paper all the world's problems in one piece of paper. Plus, we've told you in the past that he likes maps and graphics. Well, here's a new story where his top intelligence officials basically confirm that in comical terms. I love it. Mike Pompeo, who is a CIA director, says, well, Trump likes, quote, killer graphics. By the way, when you're talking about that coming from the head of the CIA, I'm not sure I'd use that language. Sometimes they have had literally killer graphics. Anyway, in other words, he doesn't like to read because he's a child, so we have to keep drawing pictures for him. It continues to get better. Pompeo says, well, the president, quote, prefers to get to the core of the issues quickly. In other words, he gets bored easily, he gets distracted, and you have to entertain him and do some juggling and then go, okay, here's all of North Korea in 30 seconds or less. And then Trump, no wonder, comes out and goes, nobody knew this, but it turns out North Korea is complicated. Really, knucklehead. I love that this is coming from his top guys. These are barely concealed as, what are we gonna do? The guy's a moron, we're trying our best. So here's another great quote from Pompeo. That's our task, right? To deliver the material in a way that he can best understand the information we're trying to communicate. Wow, that's better than if you just called him an imbecile. He's like, well, we try to communicate with the president in a language he can understand. Pretty pictures, graphics, maps. Hey, Donnie, it's briefing time. Oh, right after nap time. Okay, now don't get cranky on me. Oh, Donnie, here's a picture. This is what North Korea looks like. Oh, I'm already bored. Okay. Oh, such unbelievable embarrassment. Now, Trump doesn't really deny any of this, although he does say, it's one of my favorite quotes of all time. You know, I'm like a smart person. I don't have to be told the same thing in the same words every single day for the next 8 years. That was in reference to intelligence briefings.
You know, I'm like a smart person.
Agree to disagree. Who says I'm like a smart person? So that was during the campaign when they said, hey, if you're one of the top candidates, you know, Republican, Democrat, you get the intelligence briefing every day. You're supposed to get it every day. He didn't want it every day. He just wanted it once or twice a week because he was bored and he didn't like paying attention to it. He's like, I don't need it every day. I'm like a smart person. Ay, ay, ay. All right. We go back to the CIA director. He says Trump prefers free-flowing conversations over listening to his briefers teach lessons. It's a very oral, interactive discussion as opposed to sitting there and reading from a text or a script. In other words, we have to talk slowly because he's a child. He doesn't like to read and he doesn't like to be taught his lessons. You are arguably the most powerful man on earth, but you don't even want to take a minute to figure out what in the world is going on globally. Remember when he used to say idiotic things like, okay, when I get in office, I'm going to figure out the difference between the Shia and the Sunni? So good, it's going to make your head spin. I'm going to know it as soon as I'm in office. Now they're like, okay, now here's Hamas and here's Hezbollah as an example, right? Or here are our allies in the Sunni world and the Shia world, etc. Oh, come on, where's some naps? Oh, I want to go back to nap time. These are not liberal critics. These are his top intelligence officials telling you this stuff. And even Trump himself, he says, you know, I don't need, you know, 200 page reports on something that can be handled on a page. Oh, God help us all. There's no one in charge, there's no adults, there's no responsible people. There's a man child in office going, I don't want to read, I don't want to read. God help us all. Trump again says, quote, I like bullets, or I like as little as possible. Oh, God. But you're the president. You're the commander in chief. Sometimes you can't explain a complicated situation like North Korea in a bullet or in under a page. God help us all. Washington Post says Trump has also encouraged his briefers to include as many visual elements as possible. And then finally, we go to Daniel Coates, who's the director of National Intelligence. By the way, Pompeo, Coates, massive right wingers. These are Trump appointees. They're political appointees. They're not guys that are left over from the bureaucracy that are making fun of him behind his back. These are his boys. So Coates says, well, sometimes pictures do say 1,000 words. They have to draw to the man-child president. Okay, Donnie. Okay, this is North Korea. It is next to, you're not gonna believe this, Donnie. South Korea. Okay, wait. I know you're losing patience. South Korea is on our side, North Korea is against us. Did you get that in? Oh, somebody draw him a picture. Oh, God help the whole world. We have an absolute imbecile as our president. Okay. If you don't get that by now, you're never gonna get it. And if you're, again, the Trump voters, I guess you're proud that you're man-child president likes cute little pictures and can't read more than a page. Oh, that's so fucking embarrassing, man. Okay. Now, that was my second favorite story. Let's get to my favorite story. Okay. Donald Trump's handshakes have now become a worldwide controversy. Now, I want to show you videos of him shaking hands with world leaders and US leaders. And you are going to love the videos. At the very end, I have his handshake with the leader of Japan. Well, every one of these videos is fantastic, but don't miss the one with the Japanese prime minister. Okay, so first, people are taking this seriously, as they should. The leader of France just said that he's had to plan out his handshake with Trump. And apparently Trudeau has as well. First of all, let's go to the analysts and then I'll show you the videos. Sam Nunberg, who's a former Trump aide, so this is one of Trump's guys, says, I just think the president is very cognizant of the optics of what it looks like at these multilateral meetings with world leaders. And I even think the handshake is symbolic to the America First theme of the presidency and campaign. So it's not an accident, and it's not just goofball body language experts that are talking about this. It's his own allies saying, yeah, Trump loves to assert his manlyhood, and he thinks it's part of his campaign to shake hands in a manly way. I don't think it's manly at all. I think it's preposterous, as I think the videos will bear out. Well, here's Associate Professor of Psychology Frank Bernieri saying, it's an intimidation tactic. There are self-preservation strategies, and intimidation is one of the main ones. And again, you'll get to judge for yourself in the videos in a second. And then another expert, or Chris Eliza from CNN, I should say, writes in, every interaction in public is a chance to assert dominance, to show that he's in charge, that he's the boss. Trump believes a perception creates reality. If he looks like the alpha male and the powerful leader, he becomes the alpha male and the powerful leader. I think he becomes a jackass, but let's find out together. So first, we're going to start ironically with the non-handshake. This was with Angela Merkel, the leader of Germany, and you'll see she's going to lean in because the reporters are asking for it. She's going to say, I think they want us to shake hands, and he refused to shake her hand. This is from a little while back. Let's watch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Head out. Thank you, fellow.
I love that look from Merkel so much. I'm going to show it to you guys again. She leans in innocently thinking, oh, he forgot to shake hands. Like, I think they want us to shake hands. And then he's like, nope, not going to do it. And then she has that look of like, all right, whatever, dude. Here, watch it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, head out. Thank you, fellow.
That's one of my favorite looks of all time. First, she's looking at him like, can this person understand things that are spoken to it? And then she looks and goes, I said, what am I going to do? The guy's a knucklehead. All right, I'm going to move forward with my life. Now, on the recent trip to Europe that just happened a couple of days ago, then we had the new president of France, Macron. And this is just such a great video. He's coming down the aisle. There's so much to analyze here. But watch all the things that Trump does and Macron does. Here, keep my mic up and I'll do a play-by-play for you guys here. So he comes in and he just manhandles his hands. Watch this. Pull it in, Donnie. And then Macron, you see him like literally block his hand like, okay, dude, let go. Now, earlier, there was this long walk before Macron got to him. And all the world leaders are walking towards Macron. And Trump goes and randomly shakes King Philippe's hand from Belgium next to him. And King Philippe's like, what? Okay, because they're all walking. It doesn't make any sense. That's Trump signaling like, I'm the one who shakes hands. And as they're coming forward, Trump does this, like opens up his arms like, hey, come here, Macron. Macron goes to Merkel first. Oh, no. And then he shakes two other hands, and that's why Trump's like, oh yeah, Okay, so then Macron are gonna and Trump are gonna shake hands again. This time, it's a death grip to the end. Watch this.
Congratulations, great job.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations, great job.
Thank you very much.
Macron phone would not let go until Trump finally was like, okay, dude, you're about to break my fingers. And Macron said, my handshake with him, it's not innocent. It's not the alpha and the omega of politics, but a moment of truth. One must show that we won't make little concessions, even symbolic ones. Meaning, we've had enough with this guy. He thinks he could push us around literally, as he pushed the leader of Montenegro the other day in Europe, pushed him out of the way. And so this goofball thinks that shaking hands is symbolic, means America first. He's like, oh yeah, France first. This is what foreign diplomacy has come to in the Trump administration. So Trudeau was also ready for him, and he had been briefed about the handshake nonsense. So this was a little while back with the Canadian prime minister. Watch. Yeah, there you go. Okay, but that was the least harmful one. Okay, we that's fine, no problem. It's another one of my favorites. This is with the president of Tajikistan.
Excuse me, sir. Very nice to meet you.
Well, yes.
Okay, now let's go, guys, come back home here. One of the greatest of all time. This is his Supreme Court nominee at the time, Gorsuch, who's now Supreme Court Justice. Watch.
Thank you very much.
They're both such weirdos, man. Trump with the cousin, right? Given that hand job that he gives. Anyway, and Gorsuch is like, no. No, I won't move. I won't move. Show it to me one more time. Can you go to Gorsuch again?
Thank you very much.
Weirdos. Now here he is doing it to Mike Pence.
Thank you to Mike Pence. Thank you.
All right, and finally, the leader of Japan in what has to be one of the most awkward handshakes of all time. Let's watch.
What are they? Please, look at me.
All right, thank you, Pat.
Thank you, everybody. Strong hands.
That had two of my favorite moments. First of all, the longest handshake in human history, and the constant patting of the hand on top. But then my favorite was the prime minister at then, when it's over, finally, mercifully over, he's like, what am I going to do with this guy? Look, it's true. Trump clearly studied this and thinks that this is a way to assert his dominance, which I think is so sad. That's the kind of leadership you learn over a cassette tape. You know, like, oh, you know what you do next. You know, you grab the guy's hand and you pull him towards you because that shows you that you're strong and you're not going to let anybody dominate you. You're an alpha male, yeah. Oh, please, that's so embarrassing. When I see people who, with their practiced handshakes, and they come in and they're like, oh, this, right? I think, like, you're a goofball. That's not real leadership. That's a substitute for leadership, and a super sad substitute for strength or leadership. So, and by the way, that just about describes Donald Trump to a T. It's all optics, all goofy, all hiding deep insecurity, and he's got no substance at all. All he has is this super awkward handy that he does. Okay, I was gonna go further, but I decided to leave it right there. Okay, so I gotta take a break. When we come back, we have serious stories for you guys. Here comes Corbin, and then private contractors that are targeting protesters, including at Standing Rock, and how they're working with law enforcement to target those protesters. An amazing story when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. The Mad Lib writes in, there are more leaks in the White House than in an Irish pub during happy hour. Billy Runaway says, never even knew he had a communications director. Bart Brunix says, Trump doctrine, verbal ambiguity instead of strategic ambiguity. Control Left says, from now on, the president would like his intelligence briefings spelled out in his morning alphabets. And Amber N. Jackson says, handshaking 101 is taught at Trump University. I'm sure they did. They probably did teach that at Trump University. So obviously the tweets are during the live show, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, tyrtnetwork.com/live. And if you're a member this morning, you got to see the Elizabeth Warren interview live. That's one of the privileges of membership too. tytnetwork.com/join to become a member, but we will have that interview up for you guys a little bit later today. Okay, now let's go on to good news. All of a sudden, here come the Democrats. Some special election victories throughout the country. This happened at the end of last week. First of all, New York's 9th State Assembly District, that's for their obviously state assembly. Well, this is a district that's been Republican as far as anybody can remember, or as long as anybody can remember. And Trump won it very comfortably in November. 61% of the voters went for Trump. In fact, Trump beat Hillary Clinton by 23 points. So why am I even telling you this? Oh no, look at this. Christine Pellegrino, Democrat, beat her Republican opponent with a stick. She beat him 58-42. So I'm going to do that math for you. Trump won it by 23, she won it by 16. That's a 39-point swing. That's an open-handed slap, boy. What are you going to do about it? So now look, it just by itself, you might not say it's anything, but in the context of a Montana race that was way closer than originally expected, a Kansas race way closer than expected, a Georgia race where the Democrat, I believe at this point, is more likely to win, and that's Tom Price's old seat, Newt Gingrich's old seat. Wolfpack ran a race in Connecticut for a state district, which was like this one, had been held by Republicans for as long as anybody could remember. The one in Connecticut was held for over 100 years, closed a 26-point lead there. The Republican did pull it out, but closing 26 points. These are gigantic differentials that are being closed. And in this case, this Republican district, for literally as long as recorded history in that district, has now become a Democratic seat. Now, I hear from Democrats all the time in Washington that in order to win those kind of seats, you have to have Republican light, a warmed over corporate Democrat. So let's find out if that's what Pellegrino is. Whoa, look at this. Turns out Pellegrino is a school teacher in Baldwin and a union activist. And she continued teaching during her campaign, so a real person, which was joined by hundreds of volunteers who knocked on doors in Massapequa, Babylon, West Islip, and Long Island South Shore. And she served as a delegate for the Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders last year. A real person looking for a real change, and even in a heavily, heavily Republican district, she wins. Because real people beat fake people all the time. Democrats, you might want to take note. So certainly Justice Democrats have, you know, find some real people looking for real change, go to justdemocrats.com. Now Pellegrino was not, we're only working at the national level, Just Democrats are. Pellegrino was a state candidate. But let's give you more information on this, including by the way, what happened in New Hampshire. So New York Times explains, state races are also attracting attention, including Pellegrino's win and a state special legislative election in New Hampshire, where the Democrat Edith DeMare defeated Matthew Plesch, a Republican in Carroll County. Trump captured that district by 7 points in November. So these Trump leads are not surviving in these heavily Republican districts. So that might be a bellwether for Republican chances in 2018 overall at the congressional level. And it also is a sign to Democrats on what kind of Democrats you should run if you actually want to win. So to that point, let me give you one more fact about Pellegrino. In March, Democrats in Suffolk County, led by Richard Schaefer, were set to nominate a different candidate in this special election. But the Working Families Party saw Ms. Pellegrino as an inspiring choice who could win and pushed local Democrats to support her. So, Working Families Party is a progressive party in New York, and sometimes they co-endorse Democratic candidates. In this case, they did the right thing and they said, no, don't go with another corporate Democrat. Right-wingers are not interested in big business Democrats that work for their donors. That doesn't work at all. Go for Pellegrino. She's a real person, and she was a Bernie Sanders delegate, and she's honest and uncorrupted. And lo and behold, yes, even right-wing voters like that. So I think it is a bellwether of some sorts, not just as a warning to the Republicans that Trump is unpopular, but also as a warning to the Democrats. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a warning. It could be a welcome sign for the Democrats that if you run real people who are not corrupted by donor money, you have a much better chance of winning, including in red districts, or maybe even most especially in red districts. All right, will they listen to that warning or sign, good sign? You know how they are. Okay, all right, but that is great news for the rest of us, okay? Now, let me move on to a Democrat who's of another ilk, okay? Now, Cory Booker was on TV recently, and they were talking about impeachment, and then later Jared Kushner. Now, his thoughts on impeachment are not wild and crazy, but they are reserved. The Kushner stuff's a lot more interesting, but first, let me give you context here by showing you his answer on whether they should go towards Trump's impeachment.
Well, I just want to tell you right now, I'm not going to rush to impeachment. I think we need to deal with this in a very sobered way. This can't be a relitigation of an election that has now passed. This has to be about an objective assessment about the facts that are going on right now. And all I know is I'm very satisfied that we have an independent investigation now going on through the Justice Department, as well as both houses are seem to be moving not as fast as I'd like, but moving towards independent congressional investigations. We need to make sure that the United States of America is protected. We had nobody disagrees with the fact that the Russians attacked us in terms of their cyber attacks, and we need to get to the bottom of what happened. And if there were Americans that colluded with the Russians to undermine our democratic processes, they should be held to account.
So look, I don't mind that point overall. I think that you should talk about impeachment if you have evidence that he in fact worked with the Russians. And that's how it works. You have to see if he actually broke a law. I think there is now pretty good evidence that's actually in the public about obstruction of justice. I have read reporting that the Democrats are afraid to say impeachment because of what the Republicans will do. But let's give Booker the benefit of the doubt on that. So he's now, of course, the senator from New Jersey. And for the establishment Democrats, he's considered one of the leading candidates for 2020. Like, oh, here's a guy who takes a lot of donor money, works for the establishment, but seems like a real progressive. Yeah, okay. So now, all right, so you want to say that on impeachment. But now when we go to Kushner, we just found out that Trump's son-in-law is a person being investigated by the FBI for his connections to Russia. Now that's deeply concerning, but more importantly, he asked for a private line of communication with the Russians, with the Kremlin, and he asked that it be at the Russian embassy. That's mental. So if that reporting is true, of course he should lose his security clearance. Who says I don't want American intelligence looking into my conversations with the Kremlin? I'd rather do it at the Kremlin, at the Russian embassy. Seems like you're working for them, not for us. I mean, that is deeply concerning. And obviously something that I imagine a Democratic senator, one who's supposed to be one of the leaders of the Democrats, would be very concerned about. But instead, we got this answer.
In the meantime, while there's an investigation, should Jared Kushner's security clearance be revoked or at least suspended?
Well, again, I think we need to first get to the bottom of it. He needs to answer for what was happening at the time. It raises very serious concerns for me, and that could be a potential outcome that I seek. But I want to understand, at least hear from Jared Kushner, as well as the administration, about what was exactly going on there.
Whoa, let's tap the brakes here. Let's be sobered again. I want to hear from Jared Kushner. I thought that was curious. I was a little surprised by that. Now, I think Cory Booker is an establishment Democrat who takes a lot of donor money and largely does what they ask him to do with a progressive veneer. But Kushner, I mean, it's Trump's son-in-law. Why are you defending him? That's kind of weird. Oh, then you find out. It turns out Kushner is one of his donors. Let's go to David Sirota at the International Business Times explaining Kushner and other donors affiliated with Kushner companies delivered more than $41,000 to Booker's Senate campaign in 2013, according to data compiled by PoliticalMoneyline.com. Politico reported that Ivanka Trump hosted a fundraiser for Booker during that election. So when he says, I want to hear from Jared Kushner, there's a good reason for that. When he hears from Jared Kushner, sometimes it's in the form of a $41,000 check. We're not done yet though. In 2009, Jared Kushner also gave $20,000 to Booker's Newark mayoral ticket, Booker team for Newark, New Jersey campaign finance records show. And just such a inside the beltway move as Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump showed when Clinton attended Trump's wedding. That year, back in 2009, Booker attended the wedding of Kushner and Ivanka Trump. Well, if you attended their wedding and they're top donor for you, and then of course you'd want to hear them out. Hey, buddy Jared, what's up? You got any more checks for me? No, when I go on TV, I'll tell them, hey, let's be sobered here. So nice and easy. I want to hear from Jared first. This is what we're talking about when we say you work for the donors and not the voters. Now, if you cared about Democratic voters, you wouldn't do Jared Kushner any favors at all. Anyone with a modicum of sense politically would know that. But if you work for the donors, that's a different story, especially if Kushner is one of your donors. Okay, now, but I hear he's a leading candidate. Good luck with that. Okay, now, we move forward. All right, I've got another Jeremy Corbyn story for you guys. Last week I told you he was closing in on Theresa May and put a huge dent in her lead. I'm gonna tell you more about that in a second. But first I'd like to remind you that about a year ago I tweeted out saying I'm going to double down on my prediction from 3 days ago. Jeremy Corbyn will be the next prime minister of the United Kingdom. Doesn't matter when the elections are held. So I was of course referring to the next time there would be a public election where the voters would get the vote. And if you go back and find that tweet and you look at the replies, you'll see that about 70% of them say, don't know anything about UK politics, Jeremy Corbyn has no chance whatsoever. But it doesn't really matter. The video we put up from last week talking about how he's closing the lead, same exact tweets. No way, not Corbyn. And it's all over the press. I was just in the UK and the headlines are like, shock poll, fear that Corbyn is closing in. Why is that a fear? Gee, I wonder which side they're on. Anyway, here's one from the Sydney Morning Herald. Of course that's from the UK, I'm sorry, from Australia, but they're reporting in on this. Most, such as the University of Kent's Matthew Goodwin, are completely dismissive. He will, quote, happily eat my new Brexit book if Labour poll 38%, let alone beat the Conservatives, which would require a much higher figure, he said on Monday. So they are, to this late date, unconvinced, don't care, even on Monday, saying, I'm going to eat my book if he wins the Brexit book. Remember how we were so sure that Brexit wouldn't happen? I wrote a book about that and now I'll eat it. Okay, all right, let's see what happens. So remember, Theresa May had a 24-point lead. And last week I reported to you that it went down to 13 points. And then right before we did the show, another poll came out and it went down to 9 points. And how are we doing now? A couple of days later, in the beginning of this week, a new poll out, Corbyn versus May. 43% Conservative Party, that's Theresa May's party. Labour Party, 37%. I'll do the math for you, that's only 6 points. Here comes Corbyn. This is a snap election. There's almost no time to campaign. To close it from 24 points to 6 points in this window, that's crazy. Here comes Corbyn. Okay, now let's look at Theresa May's numbers. Is this campaign going well for her? I hear from the establishment, she's brilliant, really smashing, she's wonderful, way better than Corbyn. We fear Corbyn might be closing in. Let's see if the British citizens agree. According to The Guardian, more than a third of the voters, 37%, say their opinion of the prime minister is more negative than at the start of the campaign, against 25% who say it is more positive. And part of the reason for that is Theresa May did the same exact move that Hillary Clinton did. Filled with hubris, she put out a manifesto saying, oh yeah, yeah, I'm gonna hit senior citizens, I'm gonna hit them pretty hard. You know, we gotta get the money somewhere. Really, in the middle of an election, you're gonna put out a manifesto like that? Well, I appreciate her honesty, but that did not go over well. Meanwhile, Labour Party put out their manifesto, and it had things that would appeal to a lot of British citizens, and not just a few. And in fact, their slogan is for the many, not the few. And that polled really well. In fact, now we go to Corbyn. The opposite is true for Corbyn, with 39% saying they have a more positive view of Corbyn, compared with only 14% who now have a more negative view. And then there's more good news. Corbyn also leads by 13 points among voters under 50, and is tied with May among women. And again, the establishment said, oh no, Theresa May is gonna win among women, and so this is easy. And they keep telling us that things can't happen, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, they happen. Look, the reason I predicted the Corbyn victory is, if those of you saying you're not an expert on UK politics, I hear you, brothers and sisters, and I'm not here to argue about that. What I'm telling you is, and what I've said from day one, is that people are looking for populist candidates, whether they're on the right or the left, and they can't stand the establishment. That's why Brexit won, that's why Trump won, that's why Bernie Sanders closed a 60-point lead in a short period of time on Hillary Clinton. Her name recognition won the day at the end, but he was the better candidate, we told you, and that's what it turned out to be. Now Bernie Sanders, the most popular politician in all of America, by a significant margin, left or right, as long as they're not establishment. So now, more from Robert Kuttner at the American Prospect. If the election were held today, the governing Tory party would lose seats. They thought they were gonna pick up seats, that's why they held a snap election. They thought they were so clever. Labour is in striking distance of winning a majority, and the momentum appears to be with Labour. There was the bombings in Manchester, and again, the establishment media told us, oh, Corbyn handled very poorly. Of course, what happens is when there's a bombing here, you have to be more barbaric than your opponent and say, we should do random bombings in the Middle East and get more involved in the Middle East, because that's such a great idea. Kuttner explains, Corbyn drew barbs from conservatives when he said that the British support for ill-considered Mideast wars had increased the risk of terrorist attack. But it turned out that most Britons agreed with Corbyn. And when I saw him say that, and I was at the UK, in the UK at the time, I thought, that's smart, that'll work. Every newspaper at the time, no, terrible idea, what an idiot, what a schmuck, etc. I don't think they use the word schmuck in the UK. Anyway, so I want to give you two quick parts of that speech. The first part, people don't talk about enough. Here's was the first part of how he responded to the Manchester bomb.
We will reverse the cuts to our emergency services and police. Once again in Manchester, they proved to be the best of us. Austerity has to stop at the accident and emergency ward and at the police station door. We cannot be protected and cared for on the cheap.
See, this is part of a logical populist campaign. You say, hey, you want to be protected? Let's spend more on security. Doesn't that make sense? Police. I don't mean security bombing a country all the way across the world. I mean actual police here. Of course, that's popular. There was sustained applause for that line. Now to the controversial foreign policy statement. Here, watch.
We will also change what we do abroad. Many experts, including professionals in our intelligence and security services, have pointed out the connections between wars that we've been involved in or supported and fought in other countries, such as Libya, and terrorism here at home.
Now they said that was controversial, and they said, how dare you say that? Are you blaming us? He went on to explain the rest of the speech. Of course, I'm not blaming us, and it doesn't justify killing innocent civilians, the kids that were killed, etc. there. But let's rethink our foreign policy. We keep going and punching them in the face, and then when they punch back, we get surprised. He's like, so I don't think it's a good idea that we keep doing interventionism. So Most important thing is not what my opinion is or his opinion is, but the opinion of the British citizens. So now you go to this poll, they ask them, who do you agree with? 65% of Britons said that wars the UK has supported or fought are responsible, at least in part, for terror attacks against the UK. Only 25% said the opposite and 10% they didn't know. That's a giant lead for Corbyn's position. Yet again, for the millionth time in a row, the establishment is wrong and they can't see straight. They're in their bubble and they go, no, it couldn't be, it couldn't be. Now, back to Kuttner. And he makes the same point that, as I told you, I've been making now for years when it comes to Sanders, Trump, Brexit, etc. The point is that a great deal of the mass disaffection, he explains, from politics and conventional politicians can go right or it can go left. Sanders or Trump, Le Pen or Mélenchon, Brexit or Corbyn. Exactly right. So who's going to decide this election? Well, the young are, because Labour has 2/3 of the 18 to 24-year-olds, and conservatives have 2/3 of the over 65s. So if more senior citizens show up, well then Conservative Party will win, Theresa May will remain prime minister. If more young voters show up, then Corbyn can win and shock the world one more time. Here comes Corbyn. By the way, when I was in the UK, I did the usual Cenk Uygur anecdotal evidence on top of all the statistics and the actual polling. And I asked cab drivers, I asked students, I asked everybody I could get my hands on. And don't get me wrong, I know that there are reasons why people are concerned about Corbyn based on some things that he said a long, long time ago, etc. So I would get a lot of, I don't know. Do I really have to vote for either one of them? Kind of reminds you of the election that was happening here. But when you have that lack of enthusiasm, it usually hits the establishment a lot harder. There are still that are people that are enthusiastic for Corbyn. And when I pressed on and I asked all those folks, including some right wingers, who are you going to vote for? You got to vote for either May or Corbyn. In that hypothetical, every one of them said either tie. One person, I said, bullet gun to your head, Corbyn or Theresa May. And he said, I choose the bullet. Okay, but the ones that answered said Corbyn. Just anecdotal, but here are the polls. Here's Corbyn. And if you don't agree and you don't like it, and you're the establishment in the UK, just saying, brace for impact. Let's see, it could go either way. But as usual, much, much closer than the establishment wanted you to believe. Okay, now I gotta take a break, and when we come back, that devastating story about the private contractors that were following protesters at Standing Rock and are continuing to follow them today. All right, back on the Young Turks, I'm your host Cenk Uygur. Pete the Rock writes in, suddenly Bernie-crats are winning in special elections where DNC don't want to help much on. The Progressive Alliance has power. The Rebel Alliance is strong. Agreed. Sasha Ray says, sorry guys, I don't want to find Corey. Let him stay lost wherever he is. Now the point of the Corey, finding Corey graphic was, who's the real Corey Booker? Let's find him. It's so amazing the difference between what you guys think and what the Washington thinks. Like they're totally oblivious. They think you guys love Cory Booker. Or if you don't love him, that you're like a super tiny fringe of the Democratic voters. I think they're monumentally wrong, but luckily we'll have a primary and find out. Okay. Kura says Labour won't win the election on their own. They'll have to have a coalition with likely 4, maybe even 5 other parties. Possible. Let's see how that turns out. And RDGP says, as a Brit, I hope progressives learn from America's mistake of not voting for a progressive, changemaker. Hope can win. Okay. You know that when Corbyn first started, oddsmakers had his chance of winning the Labour leadership, which he now has, at 200-1. I don't declare there's no chance at all of Jeremy Corbyn being the leader of Labour. No chance. How's that no chance working out for you? All right, now let's go to a super important story. Okay. On the Young Turks, we covered Standing Rock a lot. Jordan Sherrington was there over 7 times. Wes Clark Jr., Michael Wood led the veterans for Standing Rock. When Wes came back, he told us about this company called Tiger Swan and how they had private contractors monitoring the protesters. And some of the things that he had reported seemed unbelievable. Well, turns out now they are confirmed by The Intercept. Intercept has done a brilliant piece with, first of all, a leak that they got from a contractor at Tiger Swan, plus public documents that they found to find out who these guys are, how they were used, and their unbelievable perception of protesters and how they spread that perception, not only to the company involved, but most importantly to law enforcement agencies. So Tiger Swan is hired by Energy Transfer Partners to do security and to do analysis of the protesters, or what they call them, the water protectors is what they call themselves. That is not what Tiger Swan calls them. So let's go to The Intercept's reporting. Internal Tiger Swan communications describe the movement as, quote, an ideologically driven insurgency with a strong religious component, and compare the anti-pipeline water protectors to jihadist fighters. What? That's insane. Now, the strong religious component that they're talking about is that the water protectors would go, and their main form of protest was praying. So they were peaceful, and in fact, the local authorities and the private contractors in the beginning, before cameras showed up, would say, oh, these are violent protesters and causing trouble. And then our cameras showed up and showed that they were not at all violent, that what they were doing was praying. Now the Tiger Swan takes the praying and turns it and goes that it has a strong religious component and compares them to an insurgency and jihadist fighters. That's so mental, it's unbelievable. But if you hire guys who are military guys who worked in the Middle East, then you know, if all you have is a hammer, is all you see is nails. If you're bringing guys who've been fighting jihadis, all they see is jihadis. Even when they're perfectly innocent American citizens doing the most American thing you can do, which is protesting your government and its actions in this case to support Energy Transfer Partners as they built that oil pipeline. Now, one report dated February 27th, 2017 states that since the movement, quote, generally followed the jihadist insurgency model while active, we can expect that individuals who fought for and supported it to follow a post-insurgency model after its collapse. So they frame everything from this perspective. They call innocent protesters who are sitting there praying jihadis because they're praying. And then they say, well, look, that movement did not win. Of course, they did get permission to build a pipeline from the Trump administration. But don't worry, Energy Transfer Partners, you have to keep hiring us, paying us a lot of money, because we've got to track these jihadis throughout the country. And they are. So let me give you a little bit of background on Tiger Swan. Based in Apex, North Carolina, Tiger Swan was created by retired Army Colonel James Reese during the height of the war in Iraq. What they want to do is take some of that lucrative defense contractor money. At the time, Blackwater was getting most of the contracts, and this was very lucrative stuff, and a lot of times no bid. So they're like, hey, you just, if you're an connected insider and you had a bunch of guys who'd already fought in Iraq, you just turn around, pay them a lot more money than the US military can pay them. You get them on your side, and then you turn to the government, and nobody even checks defense contracts. You get millions upon millions, hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes. And it's a good racket, and we just build the American taxpayer. So Tiger Swan now has an estimated 350 employees and maintains offices in Iraq, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, India, Latin America, and Japan. Now, these privatized defense contractors have been unleashed within the United States. What are the results? Well, let's go to internal Tiger Swan documents as reported by The Intercept. While we can expect to see continued spread of the anti-DAPL diaspora, aggressive intelligence preparation of the battlefield and active coordination between intelligence security elements are now a proven method of defeating pipeline insurgencies. So they continue to call innocent water protectors insurgents. They're not insurgents, they're Americans. But they have all these offices in Iraq, Saudi Arabia, etc. So all they see is insurgents. And they want to scare the hell out of energy transfer partners, anybody who else hires them. Oh, you need security. These are guys are like jihadis. There's no violence on their side. Again, we showed video on the Young Turks. You can see it on TYT Politics right now, where they say, oh, the water protectors started fires. And you see the cops that fire the materials that actually land on the water protector side and then start a fire. So it's just the insinuation that they're violent is absolutely preposterous. And look at the way that they are describing the area that where they're protesting as a battlefield. Okay. The leaked documents include situation reports prepared by Tiger Swan operatives in North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Illinois, and Texas between September 2016 and May 2017, and delivered to energy transfer partners. So this is not just in North Dakota, it's in five different states. They offer a daily snapshot of the security firm's activities, including detailed summaries of the previous day's surveillance targeting pipeline opponents, intelligence on upcoming protests, and information harvested from social media. The documents also provide extensive evidence of aerial surveillance and radio eavesdropping, as well as infiltration of camps and activist circles. So that's exactly what Wes Clark was talking about here on the Young Turks when he came back from Standing Rock. So yeah, they're looking at the protesters on the ground. Yes, they're looking at their social media and tracking it. And as you see from the documents, ironically, religiously so. And then they've got the aerial footage from drones, but they also infiltrate, pretending to be protesters, and meanwhile collecting data on the people who are exercising their First Amendment rights. Included among the documents obtained via public records requests were daily intelligence updates developed by Tiger Swan that were shared with law enforcement officers, thus contributing to a broad public-private intelligence dragnet. And in the internal situation reports, Tiger Swan operatives comment frequently about their routine coordination and intelligence sharing with law enforcement. Unfortunately, a lot of the law enforcement, including FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and a lot of the local sheriff's office cooperate with these guys and coordinate with them. So then you don't even know who's working for you anymore. Because remember, these guys are private contractors. They work for the pipeline company. They don't work for us, the American citizens. The cops are supposed to work for us, the citizens. The FBI is supposed to work for us. We pay their salaries. But they go and turn around and merge the private and public basically security interests. And all of a sudden they co-opt the guys that we're paying that are supposed to represent us and protect us. And all of a sudden those guys are working for the pipeline. That's not how our law enforcement is supposed to work. Now, it was only a few local police that stood up to Tiger Swan and said, no, thank you, we're not interested in that. Some counties in Iowa actually did not want to cooperate with Tiger Swan. They didn't think that was appropriate. They were absolutely right. Tiger Swan was very frustrated by that and talked about how they should do propaganda in those counties to convince the local police to work with them as law enforcement in other parts of the country were. Back to the Intercept's reporting here, the leak situation reports indicate that during the company's first weeks working on the pipeline, Tiger Swan operatives met with law enforcement in Iowa, North Dakota, including Sheriff Dean Danzison of Mercer County, North Dakota, who agreed to, quote, agreed to sharing of information. You're not supposed to share information with private contractors. They don't work for the citizens. They work for a private pipeline. When the corporations merge with the government, that has a name, and it's an unfortunate name. We don't want to go in that direction. It's called fascism. Okay, by September 13th, the documents indicate Tiger Swan had placed a liaison inside the law enforcement, quote, Joint Operation Command in North Dakota. The fusion of public and private intelligence operations targeting water protectors was underway. So they co-opted the taxpayers' money and law enforcement to work against the citizens on behalf of private corporations. So, and by the way, do we all share the profits of those private corporations? No. They take all the profits and they give some of it to Tiger Swan, but they don't share any of it with us. And then we have to pay the cops that are basically working for them to oppress our own citizens. This is grotesque. The documents revealed the existence of a now persons of interest list, as well as other databases that include identifying information such as photographs and license plate numbers. They made a list of persons of interest. These are American citizens exercising their literally most American right there is. The right to protest, freedom of speech, and freedom of the press as well. And what do? They surveil them, they take their pictures, they take their license plates, and sometimes they would track them. One of the persons who was on the list said, yeah, every time I went out, there was always a car that was trailing me. And I thought, how did they even know that I was gonna get in my car, that I was gonna drive somewhere, let alone tail me? This is not how America is supposed to work. This is a police state, and it's not even a public police state, it's a private police state. Tiger Swan's internal reports and the intelligence briefings shared with law enforcement named dozens of DAPL opponents. Some of those named are well-known activists, while others have minimal public affiliation with the Water Protector movement. According to an October 16th document obtained via the records request, the security team's responsibilities included collecting, quote, information of an evidentiary level that would ultimately, quote, aid in prosecution of protesters. So not only are they collecting information on the protesters, but they then go over to law enforcement and say, now prosecute these guys. For what? For what? I don't know, it doesn't matter. They are persons of interest. They are insurgents, possible jihadis. So we're gonna put these guys in jail because they're in the way of our profits. You really think this is how America is supposed to work? The same document describes plans to continue building person of interest folders in coordination with law enforcement intelligence. Tiger Swan's situation reports also describe conversations between the company's operatives and FBI agents on at least four occasions. Hey, FBI, local law enforcement, you don't work for Energy Transfer Partners. You don't work for the Dakota Access Pipeline. You don't work for Tiger Swan. You work for us, American citizens. Anyone who's involved in this that is actually paid by the taxpayers, there should be a thorough investigation of, and they need to be explained how America works. We don't track our own citizens like we're East Germany, or we're like some sort of fascist state, and you don't do it on our dime. The situation reports also suggest that Tiger Swan attempted a counter information campaign by creating and distributing content critical of the protests on social media. They openly brag about how they claim the other side is doing propaganda. No, they're doing protests, that's what they're supposed to do. Then they go in and ironically do propaganda of their own, Tiger Swan does. And then they go, oh no, we're just countering their propaganda. Those are, what propaganda? They don't have any money. They could barely get there and they could barely maintain the campsite. What propaganda? You guys are the ones with the money that go and create fake accounts, which again, The Intercept showed through the internal documents. So let me give you more on that. The article, this article is only, this is now a part of the explanation from Tiger Swan, their report from October 3rd. They explain basically to Energy Transfer Partners, don't worry. This article, the one that they're referring to that was against the Dakota Access Pipeline, is only in the Huffington Post, but the expansion of the tribe's narrative outside of Native American community media outlets is of concern. Tiger Swan agents regularly describe protesters' account of events as propaganda. They're like, it's only in Huffington Post, but it could get worse. I mean, God, if they found out what we're actually doing up here, that would be terrible. I mean, we're just trying to counter their propaganda. And so now those are real people that they were tracking themselves. They set up fake accounts. Because what are you gonna do? You're gonna say, yeah, I'm Tiger Swan, I'm the new Pinkertons, and my job is to track innocent Americans and then try to get them arrested? You're not gonna say that. So they came up with fake groups online called Defend Iowa. Well, Iowa didn't want your defense. And in fact, the law enforcement in Iowa were among the few that stood up to you. So who the hell are you talking about saying defend Iowa? You're not from Iowa. You're a private contractor doing this for profit. Another group was Netizens for Progress and Justice. Well, doesn't that sound nice? Okay, they were for neither progress nor justice. One of the guys who was doing this, he started putting up these amateurish videos. And once The Intercept contacted them and saying, hey, don't you work for Tiger Swan? And you're pretending to be a regular citizen here with a different name, and you made up this group. So can you tell us all about that? Boom, radio silence. Not only does that guy not respond to The Intercept, all of a sudden they take down all the videos. Oh really, what happened now? So in fact, of course, you were doing propaganda, and you weren't doing it because you were interested in progress or justice. You were doing it for cold hard cash. Okay, here's another Tiger Swan situation report. They say of most concern when they were tracking the protesters were the quote Earth First magazines found on the camp. These magazines promote and provide tactics, techniques, and procedures for violent activity. Now they have to say that the protesters are violent to justify all the money that Energy Transfer Partners is paying Tiger Swan for security and their analysis of security. So they go on to say exploitation of ongoing native versus non-native rifts and tribal rifts between peaceful and violent elements is critical in our effort to delegitimize the anti-DAPL movement. In other words, their agitators that have now infiltrated the camps go and try to create rifts where rifts did not exist, to split up the groups, to get them to start fighting. And they mention that there are peaceful protesters. They go, but let's get them started to fight. And they have no evidence to back up their violent element claim, but they have to, of course, say that. But isn't that amazing? They've spent money to make sure that they are pretending to be protesters. And so the next time you're in one of these protests, you also have to think, if someone's starting a fight, do they genuinely believe that? Is that their heartfelt opinion? Or are they a private contractor meant to create and sow chaos in your camps to split you up? So it is a tactic that they use, and now their internal documents confirm. Tiger Swan, this is more from their own documents. Tiger Swan collection teams will make contact with event organizers to embed within the structure of the demonstration to develop a trusted agent status to be cultivated for future collection efforts. Now, The Intercept explains, Tiger Swan pays particular attention to protesters of Middle Eastern descent. A September 22nd situation report argues that the presence of additional Palestinians in the camp and the movement's involvement with Islamic individuals is a dynamic that requires further examination. What? That's a random Palestinian American dude who went to go protest. The Intercept talked to him and he's like, Palestinians care about indigenous rights, so I went to go support indigenous rights here in America. He's a Palestinian American. They're like, oh my God, it's a Middle Easterner, jihadi. Pay even more attention to him. He's brown, he's an Arab. And that's not the only guy that they tracked because they were Middle Eastern. Cass County Sheriff's Deputy Tanya Johnner emailed several other officers, including two FBI agents, with an overview of information provided by company intel. The information pertained to a woman whom Johnner labeled as, quote, a strong Shia Islamic, with, quote, a strong female Shia following. The woman had, quote, made several trips overseas. Now they're looking into where you went overseas. What does it mean to be a strong Shia Islamic? I don't know what that means. Did she do anything that is wrong? Did she do anything right? No. Do you have any history of that? If they had history of it, believe me, they would write it endlessly. No, the main charge against her is she's Shia Islamic. If all you have is a hammer, all you see is nails. So these guys have been private contractors all over the Middle East fighting what they call jihadis. God knows if those are actual jihadis or not. There certainly are real jihadis in the Middle East, and then others that look like them. And so they come here, what do they see? They see the same thing. Well, brown skinned person, jihadi. That's a strong Islamic, Shia Islamic over there. Oh, that's a Palestinian, watch out for them. And the company intel is given to law enforcement. Now all of a sudden law enforcement and the FBI are looking out for the Islamics. This is absolute insanity. Now the end is not any better here, it gets worse. Tiger Swan consistently describes the peaceful demonstrators using military and tactical language more appropriate for counterterrorism operations in an armed conflict zone. At times, the military language verges on parody, as when agents write of protesters, quote, stockpiling signs, or when they discuss the, quote, caliber of paintball pellets. More often, however, the way that Tiger Swan discusses protesters as, quote, terrorists. Their direct actions as, quote, attacks, and the camps as, quote, a battlefield, reveals how the protesters' dissent was not only criminalized, but treated as a national security threat. They're calling innocent American protesters terrorists. Then they're coordinating with law enforcement and building a list of persons of interest that they then target not only during active protests, but continue to this day. They're tracking those people. Why? They gotta keep getting paid. So they keep telling energy transfer partners, no, this is a serious situation in the battlefield. And so keep paying me and I'm gonna keep tracking these terrorists that are actually exercising their First Amendment rights. A March 1 report states that protesters, quote, operational weakness allows Tiger Swan elements to further develop and dictate the battle space. This is gross. Sickening that this is happening inside the United States. In one internal report dated May 4th, this is way after the pipeline is approved, a Tiger Swan operative describes an effort to amass digital and ground intelligence that would allow the company to, quote, find, fix, and eliminate threats to the pipeline. An eerie echo of find, fix, finish, a military term used by special forces in the US government's assassination campaign against terrorist targets. We can't let these lunatics operate like inside the United States as if the entire country is a battlefield and people who are exercising their rights are jihadis. So I don't know how we put an end to this, but the first and most important thing in the beginning is awareness. Brilliant job by The Intercept to find these documents. Here's another one. Tiger Swan operative says, everyone must be concerned of the lone wolf. Should we slip from that conscience, we may all be amiss. Meaning that there are no more protests, but I gotta keep tracking every protester that I put on the list and you gotta keep paying me for that because one of them could be a lone wolf. A lone wolf what? A lone wolf protester? That would make him an American. Now, by the way, of course, this is all for corporate interests. If you're a Tea Party protester, ain't nobody tracking you because you're pro corporations. You come out there and go, yeah, take away our healthcare, give it to private companies. Then nobody tracks you. Then you're happily doing propaganda for the private interests, and you don't go on any list. But if you actually care about citizens and trying to protect them, trying to protect the water, trying to protect your community, then you go on a list. In recent week, the company's role has expanded to include the surveillance of activist networks marginally related to the pipeline, with Tiger Swan agents monitoring, quote, anti-Trump protests from Chicago to Washington, D.C., as well as warning its client of growing dissent around other pipelines across the country. So now it gets broader and broader, and if you're protesting Trump, now you go on a different list. When will this end? This is how you lose a democracy. Final quote is from another Tiger Swan operative. They say, much like Afghanistan and Iraq, the fighting season will soon be here with the coming warm temperatures. No, North Dakota is not like Afghanistan or Iraq. There are no jihadis there. There are no insurgents, there are no terrorists. Those are us, American citizens. And it's not fighting season unless you make it fighting season. And if you treat us as some sort of insurgency and you militarize these corporations now, before they had runaway rights, they had corporate rights, then they wound up having human being constitutional rights, which is so insane. And now they are weaponized. These corporations have run absolutely amok. If we don't get control over them, they're gonna get control over us. And now they've brought in these private contractors to literally get control over us with weapons and to take over our law enforcement and to declare us persons of interest and begin to figure out how they could put us in jail. This is disgusting and it's one of the most un-American things I have ever seen. Okay, I'm way over time, so we gotta take a break here, and we've got really important stories for you in the second hour, so come right back.